From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Man, there's so much going on. It's hard to fit it into 1 3-hour show, but I hope we can listen every step of the way. 1-866-408-7669. We'll squeeze in calls in between. Tom Carrico standing by. He is a missile defense expert, and he's going to be invaluable now, judging by what the president announced yesterday. He wants an Iron Dome for the country. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West about the changing culture at the Pentagon. And meanwhile, today is going to be a big day. Secretary of Homeland Security is in New York City. Guess what she's doing? She's with ICE, ATF, and others as they're taking down the Venezuelan gangs in our city and other high-profile criminals here illegally. And now the Dems have their Senate leadership presser. That'll be a little bit later on this afternoon. That should be fun. And Caroline Leavitt has her first White House briefing as press secretary. So that'll be interesting, too. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I just wanted to say that I'm so sorry. All my people are getting attacked. The children.
We got 250,000 Americans dead from fentanyl across the open border. Where's the tears for them?
Exactly. That Selena Gomez was the sobbing one. Simply awesome. The border surge is now a slow trickle as a Hollywood starlet sobs about the mass exodus of illegal criminals. And Holman answers.
Number two.
All of it is focused on cruelty, on division, on separating families.
And the impact is, of course, on Americans that don't look like the Trump family, essentially.
Media mayhem. The left bias continues. But this time, they have the right to go against and the mass public pushing back.
Number one.
If we do our job over the next 21 months, not only will House Republicans be reelected and expand our majority in 2026, we will cement a national governing coalition that will preserve American freedom for generations to come.
And that is the hope. The president gave a long address yesterday in front of House Republicans. The 100-day blitz continues, focusing on aid and defense, while he gets a Treasury secretary and has queued up three controversial picks this week. They all have hearings, and I think Pam Bondi should get her confirmation vote sometime today. And keep in mind, if you ever want to get the podcast, go to the Fox News app and get the podcast there, Brian Kilmeade Show, or wherever you get podcasts. We are there for you. Let's bring in Tom Carrico. He's a senior fellow with the International Security Program and the director of the Missile Defense Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Tom, this was the announcement yesterday among the many messages that Trump had for the country.
To immediately begin the construction of a state-of-the-art Iron Dome missile defense shield, which will be able to protect Americans. You know, we protect other countries, but we don't protect ourselves. And when Ronald Reagan wanted to do it many years ago, luckily, we didn't. We didn't have the technology then. It was a concept, but we didn't. And now we have phenomenal technology. You see that with Israel. We're out of 319 rockets. They knocked down just about every one of them. So I think the United States is entitled to that.
What do you think? Is it possible to have one system protecting a country this large? Tom Carrico, welcome back. Your thoughts about the president's announcement yesterday. Could we make this happen?
Yeah, look, I think this is a positive step. I don't think it's necessarily going to be one system. I think it's going to be a multiplicity of efforts. And the reason is, as the executive order notes, it's a multiplicity of threats. The problem we're trying to solve here is everything from UAVs to cruise missiles to hypersonic gliders and, yes, ballistic missiles.
So this is a what about the cost, Tom? What do you think? What's probable for the cost? Some people are saying $250 billion.
Well, we don't have anything to cost yet. This is a 60-day review telling the SecDef to go look at these problems, look at these capabilities, and come up with some recommendations for how we ought to do this. There's a couple directions in terms of accelerating our space sensors, which, of course, is underway already. And that's all for the good. We don't have something to cost because we don't yet have the recommendations for what it is. But I think we'll hear that in 60 days.
So Israel, a country the size of New Jersey, has arrows, has David Sling, has the arrow system and the Iron Dome. And still, that's about only 85% effective, correct?
Look, that's their approach. It needs to be good enough because there's so many thousands of these threats coming in, and that's okay. You know, I fundamentally, the Iron Dome system for Israel is a very specific thing. For us, for this executive order, it's a metaphor. But let's play with that metaphor and use that. Iron Dome, as you know, Brian, is the lowest layer. It's the lowest tier layer of that multi-layered defense. And that's why I think the foundation for an Iron Dome for America is going to need to begin with the lower tier air and cruise missile threats. Those are the threats that Ukraine is facing all the time. It's a big part of what Israel has been facing all the time. And we, unfortunately, in the U.S. homeland are remarkably vulnerable to those kinds of threats. We've got to shore up the air defense and the cruise missile capabilities, and then also, of course, do more on the big ballistic stuff.
How about drones? I mean, people are really worried about drones, what we're seeing in the Russian battlefield. Drones are extremely effective, and they're low tech.
Yeah, and look, counter UAS, countering these systems, this is very much not the bleeding edge rocket science. It's very doable. The challenge is dealing with the mass of them. Directed energy, not just lasers, but high-powered microwaves and other means to jam them. I think that's largely the future to contend with the massive swarms that we're seeing on this front. But you're right. We've seen how many different news stories in the past year about various drone swarms here in the continental United States. And so we're going to have to, again, figure that out for the homeland and figure out the authorities mm-hmm. and the acquisition path so that we are, in the first instance, sensing these things. So that we are tracking and identifying, is this a Cessna or is this a drone that is a threat? And then, you know, distributing, not everywhere. This is not about defending every acre of pasture in the Midwest, much as we'd like to. We have to be selective. And I think you actually saw that in the executive order. We have to be selective in terms of what we defend. We'll defend a number of things well, but we're not going to try to defend everything against every drone.
Here's what worries me. I just worry about if having a missile system protect today's against today's rockets and missiles and ICBMs, but we're not looking at tomorrow's, and all of a sudden it's nullified. When you get something like a hypersonic and you think, oops, I didn't know that was coming.
Yeah, so the executive order does talk about that as well. It talks about accelerating some of our hypersonic sensor and interceptor efforts. Those things are underway already, you know, to kind of deal with the threats of 2040. And so the hypersonic defense interceptor program that was begun in the last decade is currently on track for the early 2030s. And so this asks the Department of Defense to go and look, hey, can we accelerate that? Can we provide some additional capability in the meantime? We need to defend things like Guam. Guam is United States territory. Guam is our first line of defense for power projection in the Pacific vis-a-vis China.
So that's interesting. So that would be one of the places you'd want to protect, even though it's not in America proper.
Well, it is very much America proper. It's not a state, but it is American homeland and American sovereign territory. And when Pete Hegseth was asked in his hearing what's the most important island in the Pacific, his answer, and it was correct, was Guam. And so air and missile defense for Guam is and needs to be at the top of the list. We've got to have an Iron Dome over Guam as well as you know other places as well.
Do you think the Chinese have one? Do the Russians have a missile defense? Or will we be the first?
Yeah, so look, there's a multiplicity of air and missile defense. Think S-300, S-400, and essentially the Chinese versions of the same. There's a lot of that. This is why when the Russian-made S-300s that Iran had around its nuclear facilities, when the Israelis took that out, that was kind of a big deal because it left them vulnerable to potential follow-ups. So the Russians mm-hmm. have like this wall of air defenses from the Arctic to Syria, or they right. did have it in Syria. So there's a lot of it. The supply and demand of air and missile defenses, it's significant for ourselves and the bad guys.
And Tom, you have to get out. I appreciate the quality, Tom, in this relatively breaking news because you're one of the few experts in the country. Tom Carrico, thank you.
Happy chat. Thanks.
Senior fellow with the International Security Program, director of the Missile Defense Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. So that's one of the things that President brought up on the campaign trail that almost nobody talked about, because the more sensational things are, what he wants to do with the border, you know, how he wants to his stance on the Ukraine war, where people were talking about him lowering prices and energy. And I would always hear him say, Iron Dome for the country. And I thought, of course. I mean, we're watching that crazy guy in North Korea. Now he has intercontinental ballistic missiles. So we're going to just let him take out California and then destroy him? Even though his army obviously is terrible, almost every one of them is going to die in Ukraine. That's how bad they are. Even though all those things, he still has a cyber program and he still has a missile program. And you could honestly say in America, we do not have a missile defense. So I think that Pete's all over this. It's got to be plausible. It's got to be feasible. And it's got to be practical because, as he said, there are certain areas it's just going to be open field in America. Go ahead, knock it out. But let's protect our power centers. All right, so Lieutenant Colonel Alan West next, but at the bottom of the hour. But next is you guys. I want to talk more about the first 100 days because the President of the United States did some pretty big things yesterday. He paused all federal grants and loans and federal assistance except for Medicare and Social Security. You realize that. There's $100 billion of grants to state and local and tribal governments that is paused. That is a big deal. He wants to get a hold of all this spending. He also fired a whole bunch of the Department of Justice attorneys, many of which were on the investigation of him because can't trust you, you're out. People are mad at that. Good luck with that. And goodbye DEI everywhere, but especially in the Pentagon right away. And if there's any remnants of this program, you will be fired. I love it. The president also did something else. When it comes to firing someone in a civil service union, it's almost impossible unless you move them to a different status. The different status would be as needed. And if you move them to as needed, they can be fired. And 50,000 civil service workers who had their status changed to as needed, many of which are going to be fired. I don't revel in anyone losing their job, but I do revel in government efficiency and people who are counting and just assume they're entitled to that job. You're next, Brian Kilmeade Show.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
This episode is brought to you by MeUndies. While MeUndies can't totally help your love life this Valentine's Day, they can offer you insanely comfy undies and loungewear to buy or gift. MeUndies has so many awesome Valentine's Day prints and styles. Plus, you can match with your partner, friends, or even your pets. This Valentine's Day, give the gift that'll keep them thinking of you. And score huge site-wide savings at MeUndies.com/Spotify. That's MeUndies.com/Spotify. MeUndies. Comfort from the outside in.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
DeepSeek is a Chinese company that was able to launch a model that is as performant as some of the leading AI, US AI companies, but at 10% of the cost. So that is a very significant breakthrough, a massive architectural breakthrough. And it's technically a win for innovation overall, because U.S. companies are going to look at this and be able to add what they're currently doing, add this Chinese method to what they're currently doing. Many now are calling this a Sputnik moment. But what truly is happening here is DeepSeek and this Chinese AI company, they've reverse engineered what U.S. companies have already done. So it is still a breakthrough, but U.S. companies are still at the frontier. What will be the true Sputnik moment is if a Chinese AI company can build a model that does something U.S. models cannot. So right now they're equally as performant, but if China can have a breakthrough and do something that U.S. models cannot, that's an even bigger wake-up call.
So what they say is that they did it so much cheaper. That's what's stunning. They cost $6 million, where ours cost 100 times that. And that was Sinead Bovell. She's a futurist tech entrepreneur talking about DeepSeek. And that's this new AI version that we knew about DeepSeek 3, or I think it was 3 that came out December 26th. And everyone said, wow, that's equal to ChatGPT. And that was jarring, and that's why it was so good to have David Sachs and this new AI czar that he has, also crypto czar. And he's, of course, one of the founders of PayPal. He started multi-billion-dollar companies. He's got this great podcast. And David Sachs is somebody that understands that the Biden administration, let's just say they had the best intentions. They put such strict guardrails on their AI development because they're so fearful of it. What they didn't understand is they were allowing China to get ahead. And that's why I believe that John Andrews and others, including the president of the United States, were not that upset that China came out with this cutting edge version. It just was a wake up call to the country. Guys, we're not just going to coast to being AI dominant. The Chinese are able to see what we did and do it cheaper. Maybe it's labor, but maybe it's also the cheaper chips. That's which caused, I understand, the falling down of the NVIDIA stock and the slide of the overall stock market in general. NVIDIA has fallen so rapidly. Four of the six biggest stock market drops of a stock happen of NVIDIA. It goes really high and goes really low with big time tumbles. So you have the stock beginning to bounce back. A lot of people are jumping in. What does NVIDIA do? They make chips. So we have 16,000 chips in, whether it's Microsoft, the Google version of Gemini, or the ChatGPT. They say it's 16,000 chips. DeepSeek uses 2,000, and they use cheaper chips. The theory was that only major companies like Microsoft, Google, and Meta could afford to invent AI and keep us and lead the way. And then this company comes and does it cheaper. They needed billions for chip. We needed billions for chips. DeepSeek said they needed about 6 million in raw computing power to train the new system. Now, here's the rub. If you don't care about AI, say, I don't care about this stuff. All you know is if we let our eye off the ball, if we let China continue to reverse engineer our breakthroughs and do it better and cheaper, then we're going to allow China to decide what's real or not. For example, if you put in something into this DeepSeek and you asked a question of, who is President Xi a great leader? We do not know how to answer that. You ask, what is Tiananmen Square in 1989? We do not know how to answer that. If you ask, what is Taiwan? Taiwan is part of China. So are you going to allow DeepSeek to decide what's real or not? Of course not. Which brings me to TikTok. For those of you out there that said, what's the big deal about TikTok? They have younger, the eyeballs and the attention of our younger generation especially. And yes, people make money off it, but they also have a news feed. And you could just be sure that in Panama Canal, the Chinese have no presence there, even though we know a Hong Kong company owns both sides of the Panama Canal. When you talk about the Belt and Road Program, the best thing ever, that's a Chinese way of extorting other countries that desperately need infrastructure. China pays for it. When they can't pay it back, they take something from that country. So if you're going to allow them to skew the next generation of Americans and then rule over AI, don't think so. We can't call ourselves a superpower for too much longer. Joe on Long Island. Hey, Joe.
Brian, good morning. I'm switching topics. I'm sorry. I was watching Fox and Friends this morning and with my wife, and we seen the photos of Kristi Noem in New York City and ICE and DEA. And I'm so grateful to President Trump, Pete Hegseth, and Kristi Noem, Tom Homan, for protecting American citizens against the real thugs, not like Andrew Cuomo called ICE thugs. And now he wants to be the mayor of New York City. And Adams invited these illegals in, and we don't even know who we're living next to, who's walking amongst us, double homicide murderers, and President Trump securing the country. We are just gotcha. So grateful.
Joe, yeah, it's great to see. We're safer today because of it. Yesterday in the Rio Grande crossings, only 60. During the Biden administration, on average, 4,000. If you don't think things are better for the Border Patrol, you're not paying attention.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I just wanted to say that I'm so sorry. So many people are getting attacked. The children. I don't understand. I'm so sorry. I wish I could do something, but I can't. I don't know what to do. We'll try everything I've...
We got 250,000 Americans dead from fentanyl across the open border. Where's the tears for them? I've met with hundreds of angels, moms and dads who are separated from their children because they buried them because they're killed by illegal alien. We got 500,000 children who are sex trafficked into this country, separated from their families, put in the hands of criminal cartels to be smuggled into the country. This administration can't find over 300,000. Where's the tears for them?
So that is a great point by Tom Homan. The sobbing woman was Selena Gomez, who has 420 million followers. So don't think it's just some starlet crying. She's got huge impact. And she should get the story right and get a perspective. Somebody. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West joins us now, Dallas County Republican Chair, the American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director, former congressman from Florida. Colonel, your thoughts about that debate?
Well, to me, she made a fool of herself, and understand that here in Dallas over the weekend, on Sunday, we had a bunch of people that were blocking traffic downtown Dallas, protesting against these deportations and actually, you know, using the expletive to reference President Trump. Look, these people are crying for criminal illegal immigrants. Those are the folks that are being picked up. As a matter of fact, why isn't Selena Gomez, you know, upset about the child rapists? The fact that we have allowed child rapists into this country, those are the people that are being picked up and being deported. So, again, I don't understand where the left, the progressive socialists, are coming from, because they are fighting a losing battle. We saw Governor Pritzker stand up and talk about how he's going to defend people that are here criminally, first and foremost, for coming to the country illegally, and then also based upon the crimes that they've committed since they've been here. So I don't understand the direction that they're going with this, but it does remind me of when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was down there crying, fake crying at some facility back during President Trump's first term.
So, you know, the average illegal is spending $8,000 a year, probably more. New York City spends $4.5 billion. Who's crying for the kids programs in the schools that are suffering, or the fact that everything's more expensive to pay for all this stuff, and we're still at a deficit? In terms of the crossing already at the southern border, in January 24, knowing that Trump's in office, it was 665, 731 the next day, 582 the next on the 26th, as we get closer to today. Yesterday in the Rio Grande crossing, there was 60 people. At some times during the Biden administration, there were at least 4,000 a day. I mean, nobody expected this type of success this early, did they?
I think that we did. I think that when all of a sudden you make a dedicated effort to protect the sovereignty of this country, when you follow up and you know, have actions to say, no, you're not going to be able to stay here. And it started on day one. This was not a joke. This was not something we had to spin up and we had to try to get to in the first 100 days. It started on day one. You have sent a message. When the president says to the president of Colombia, when President Trump says to the president of Colombia, we're going to come down hard on you, and you will accept these people back. Guess what? He comes back and he backtracks. And he even says, we'll send our, my presidential plane to bring these people back. Look at Mexico now and the leadership there saying, yes, we'll take these people back. This is about, you know, strength. This is about showing resolve. And this is about these people that are here criminally, illegally, and committing crimes against American people, understanding that we're not going to tolerate this. And think about, you know, Selena Gomez again crying. Trinity Aragua is going, they're going into middle schools here in the state of Texas to recruit new members. Why is she crying about that? And so, again, coming back to your initial question, the left is completely on the wrong side of this issue.
So let's talk about Pete Hegseth. Day one at the Pentagon, he's going to be really pushed to recruit. He's also pushing for a missile defense for the country. That's the president's vision. He's going to put together a few proposals for it. And he's going to rid the Pentagon of DEI. Is that indeed possible, to rid every sector and every corner of DEI?
Yeah, it was possible for them to implement it, so it's possible to remove it. Look, the thing about the military is we have got to be focused on meritocracy once again. You know, when I showed up at Jump Master School back in 1984, I only had five jumps. There were some people in Jump Master School that had hundreds of jumps. I graduated, and there were some people that did not graduate that had hundreds of jumps. It wasn't about my skin color. It was about me understanding all the intricacies of airborne operations and equipment and being able to pass all the different tests and meet the standards. That's what we have to get back to. We don't have to have a military that, as the current chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Charles Brown, is talking about, we can only have X amount of white male pilots in the Air Force. Why? We want to have the best. And I think you're going to see recruitment and retention pick up. And the fact that President Trump has said that we're going to bring back those folks that were affected by COVID, you know, with back pay. And, you know, if they want to come back, absolutely you're going to see a change because there's a different environment there.
So they're going to be removing the DEI and transgender ideology from the service. Now, they say there's, I think, 7,000 or 0.7% of the force of the fighting force is transgender. Do you think they should go?
Yes. There's not the military is not there for people that are confused about whether or not they're a little boy or a little girl. And the American taxpayers are not responsible for providing hormonal therapy, sex change operations, all these things. And furthermore, Brian, I think the American people need to understand these individuals that are sitting around talking about, you know, I'm not sure about my sexuality. I need to have these therapies and these surgeries, whatever. They're non-deployable. Now, why do you have someone in uniform that can't deploy? Why do you have someone in uniform that can't go out there and take a physical fitness test? And these are the type of exemptions that they have. So we want to have a military that can deploy, can fight, and can win, and they're not worried about social, ideologies and cultural issues such as this transgenderism. We just want a military that, as Colin Powell said, they go in, they break things, and they kill people.
So the other big story is not just DEI in the Pentagon, but throughout the country, president through the federal government, get rid of DEI programs, back to meritocracy. Al Sharpton's now trying to set up boycotts of those companies, private companies like Walmart and Costco and others, that Disney, that have said, forget about DEI programs in colleges. Here he is yesterday talking about what Trump's really doing. Cut 13.
Corporations came forward and said, we're going to do diversity. We're going to do this because race needs to be dealt with. And for Donald Trump to be able to cancel a commitment they made is an outright affront to the black community, brown community, LGBTQ, gay community. And that is why we will stand with those that stand with us. Costco's immediately stepped out and said that they would not back off DEI, a game we are calling a buy-in.
Right, so Costco caved to the pressure from Al Sharpton.
Yeah, at some point in time, we have got to have some of these CEOs and these corporations to stand up to this race punk hustler and say, you know, go pound sand. Really, because Al Sharpton does not mean for anything that is good for America. He is only about a certain agenda that will enrich his pockets. No one is going to miss DEI programs. And furthermore, when you are saying that we have to change and alter the standards, when we are so focused on equality of outcomes instead of equality of opportunity, why isn't Al Sharpton, you know, coming down on the Democrat Party because they're forcing young black kids into failing public school systems? He's not talking about school choice. He's not talking about parental rights. He's not talking about the things that affect the black community. He's talking about things that the Democrat Party wants him to go out and stir the pot on. He is a disgrace. He is disgusting.
All right, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, thanks so much for joining us. A lot on this plate, a lot going down. We'll talk to you again soon.
God bless. Take care, Brian.
You got it. And the president's got 350 executive orders already out there. 350, and he's continuing to go. The pace is only going to increase. We used to talk about 100 days. You should be 100 hours. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we're back. And as I mentioned before, is this so interesting? I expected Donald Trump to be criticized mostly in the media. I mean, we're all used to it. We've seen it really since he declared coming down the escalator the last time around. And we saw the negative coverage during his indictments, the run up to it, January 6th. That's all they bring up. But what's interesting now, he gets elected, he wins the popular vote, wins every battleground state, improves in every single state, improves in every single state and in every single category. Even the ones he didn't win, he made gains in. And it's got people's attention. And the thing is now, when they go out and they just start their one-sided view of the president, I think they're not gay. They're only talking to themselves. They're not talking to the country. They're certainly not making gains. I was stunned to see this already. I couldn't say stunned, but I'll share these numbers with you. when you talk about the number of pardons, the big story was how Joe Biden won across everything he said, went back again to everything he said, and pardoned his whole family preemptively, which he said is something that would set a terrible precedent. But he did it anyway. His entire family, his sister, his brothers, his son, his wife, all pardoned. And then he pardoned everyone on the January 6th committee. Huge news. Now, the president, current president, turned around and pardoned everybody who was arrested, 1,500 people, who were implicated in January 6th. When they went ahead and looked at how the coverage was on the networks, ABC, CBS, NBC spent over 46 minutes covering Trump, 3 minutes covering Biden's pardons. And that's why people are fed up with the national media. Both are stories. I'm not thrilled he took got those all everybody out of prison. Some of these guys are out and they look dangerous right now. But most of them did not deserve the sentences they got. I would prefer, with the huge staff and all these people who are hanging on to Trump, give some of these lawyers something to do, go through every single case and make recommendations. But they said a blanket release them. But my goodness, the Biden thing is just as big, if not as egregious. And Democrats have said so, but these media outlets don't feel it's worth it. And that's why when Harry Enten of CNN started looking at some of the poll numbers and how Trump's doing, that's why you have other anchors, while he's going over the numbers that CNN generated, still don't want to believe it. Listen to this yesterday, cut 14.
This is a very different Donald Trump. He's leading a very different administration, the way he's attacking things. And the American public is very much more in line with him than they were at any point during his entire first term.
I would say, correction, this is not a very different Donald Trump. This is a very different Donald Trump as being viewed by voters
in the way he's going about things.
Only, I have a hard time believing this.
This is 100% true. I went back. I love spreadsheets. Donald Trump's is the first guy ever whose net approval rating in the first month of his second term is higher than any rating that he had as an entire first term, Kate Baldwin. Hmm. This is true. I don't make stuff up. The numbers are the numbers.
Let me tell you something. This is a CNN anchor with a CNN pollster, and the anchor is outraged at what the pollster says. It's nuts, because that's what the American people are reflecting. Even if CNN tends to be more anti-Trump, the numbers don't lie. If you're doing a study, you hire legitimate pollsters, they're not going to ruin their reputation for one CNN contract. Here's more in the pardons. The Daily Show had fun with this. Cut 39.
Like last week's pardons.
These pardons are sick. They are offensive. They are un-American.
This is one of the most egregious, despicable acts in American history.
This is textbook authoritarian takeover 101.
I knew I should have taken that class and not majored in submissive liberal crying 101. Do what you will, Trumpisky. Was it? Yes. Should you have let some of those terrible people? No. Is it an abuse of pardon power? I don't know. But that is his constitutional power. Again, for some reason, we have given presidents the power of a king. And then we say, oh, by the way, with that power, you're not going to get all like kingly and on us, right? To put that in constitutional terms, if I could, don't hate the player, hate the founding fathers.
So it's 100% true. But you notice people are just critical. Even there, John Stewart's not bringing up the pardons of his son. Crazy. So the other moment that I think stood out yesterday is when John Fetterman went on The View. I don't know what they were expecting. I guess they wanted to scold him for going to visit the president at Mar-a-Lago, scold him for backing Israel, not condemning the Palestinians, scold him for saying that there's a huge problem at the border that needs to be dealt with. Here's some of the interaction that a laid-back John Fetterman with his hoodie and shorts, cut 17.
Immediately after the election, I was like, hey, you know, we have a choice. You know, we can freak out and follow every other thing around, you know, like a cat, you know, with a laser burn, you know, after everyone. But I'm not that guy. I'm not going to be that Democrat. You know, for me, there's things I'm going to agree with. I'm going to disagree with. But I'm in the business of finding wins for Pennsylvania and for the nation and engaging the president. I think I see that as doing my job.
Right. And that doesn't stop them from saying he's not doing his job. Cut 16.
All of it is focused.
No, I'm sorry. Cut 18. My bad.
And I also agreed that the trial in this city, in New York, was politically motivated, that wouldn't otherwise have been prosecuted if it was someone else.
Just for clarification, did you mean that the 34-count case in which Donald Trump was found guilty of various financial crimes was politically motivated here in New York?
I found that when the judicial system gets weaponized and targeted political enemies for political gain, I think that's inappropriate.
So their heads exploded because they want to jump on this guy. They want to support this guy. They want to, but everything he says is logical. The crowd wasn't clapping, but people at home were. Senator John Fetterman might be voting with Republicans a lot more. And if they keep pushing him, not talking about on The View, but if they keep pushing him and ridiculing him, although Chuck Schumer is smarter than that, he's going to lead the party. There's no doubt about it. Cut 19.
Now, there are those on the left who feel like you have made a rightward shift recently, going to Mar-a-Lago, joining Truth Social, your positions on issues like immigration, fracking. What do you say to those who are now, in a sense, questioning your commitment to the Democratic Party?
Oh, well, first, I want to just say I am so sorry for what happened to that officer. I mean, he's had a heart attack. His life, he almost died. I mean, I've had a stroke. Same thing. I absolute empathy and just appalled for what I witnessing what happened on January 6th. And I absolutely would reject pardoning people that were involved on that. And so right word, that's just happened not to be true. I've been on record, too, saying I am not going to become a Republican. You know, although maybe some people might be happy on one side.
Right. And they're saying they're upset. But you know who's not upset that I could tell? Anyone in Pennsylvania. Him and Dr. Oz were locked in a tight fight. He won. Dr. Oz, I think they were successful in saying that he wasn't from Pennsylvania. He said, I went to college there. I lived there. But the predominant amount of his time over the last 20 years has been hosting of a great show on television, the Dr. Oz Show, which meant he had to stay in the New York area, New Jersey, New York area. So maybe that was one of the reasons, him being a rookie politician, but Dr. Oz is going to have a better job anyway. So now he's pretty much a moderate in a moderate state. And remember, he replaced Pat Toomey. Pat Toomey was pretty Republican, pretty conservative, a little anti-Trump. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't forget, BrianKilmeade.com. Find out how to get tickets to my February 15th show in Jacksonville.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, where Kristi Noem is here as HHS Secretary, gutting New York City of the illegal aliens, as well as especially these gangsters, these TDA, these Venezuelan gang members. They're being targeted right now in New York City, and everyone that's taking off the streets makes it safer for everybody. And they've already been to Boston. They've been through Aurora, Colorado, been through Denver. We know they've had a huge presence in Chicago over the weekend, and they've taken thousands, already affecting the traffic at the border. It's amazing what is coming out of the White House. Varney and Company will do a simulcast with us. Mark Beckman is here, CEO, an award-winning advertising agency with DMA. Best-selling author in his latest book, Some Future Day, How AI is Going to Change Everything. Mark, you could not have come out with a better book at a better time than we're coming right now out of what we saw yesterday was a huge announcement. And this huge announcement rocked the stock market and has everything to do with AI. First off, welcome.
Brian, thank you so much for having me. It's really a thrill to be on your show. It's great to see you.
So you have a real perspective about what took place yesterday. And tell me what China did that rocked everybody's world.
Well, basically what they did was they launched a new artificial intelligence named DeepSeek. But it's not new. It's been around. People think it's new. It's a new model. It's a new version. DeepSeek.
Because they had a DeepSeek that released December 26th, which was kind of showed that they were about equal with us in ChatGPT and Google's Gemini.
Correct. Right? It even goes back. I was using it during the summer. But this version was really interesting in that it has reasoning built into it. It's a little bit more advanced. But what they did was they undercut the market. And the app skyrocketed to number one on the App Store. So now we have a country filled with people that have DeepSeek on their iPhones, on their devices, their laptops, and beyond. And, you know, it's very American, as I said to you. We're like sheep in certain ways. We see the shiny object. Everybody thinks it's the cool thing. They control the narrative on social media. It was the cost of DeepSeek is virtually free. So everybody ran in, but nobody's concerned. I believe yet most people aren't concerned with the fact that now DeepSeek has access to everyone's data.
So when it comes to constructing something like this, they say the Chinese company spent just $5.6 million to come up with it. Small, very small amount compared to what OpenAI needed, what Meta needs. And now some people are saying that maybe you don't need to be these mega companies in order to lead the world in AI. Is that something you take away from this?
So it's an interesting part of the analysis, Brian. If you look at DeepSeek and how it goes back in time, its founder started a hedge fund, actually, almost 10 years ago. I think it was 2016. And the hedge fund was financed in many ways from China, and it was set up to create artificial intelligence investments and innovation. I personally don't believe that it was just $6 million that went into this. As you're probably aware, China's been investing into the AI ecosystem, including energy, including the technology, yeah, and including the compute, for a long time, into the trillions of dollars. So this isn't like an overnight thing. I do believe, however, that they were able to leverage what we've seen with OpenAI as far as their infrastructure and what they've built. They were able to use that technology to help accelerate this part of DeepSeek.
So is the word open, is that somehow giving me the wrong impression? Or they said that they did reverse forensics on the creation of Open Chatbot GPT, and that's how they were able to catch up so quick, and then in this case, temporarily, I hope, surpass us. It is open, correct?
People are speculating that they stole what OpenAI created. However, there are two parts to the DeepSeek equation that people need to understand. There's the open piece of it, which will allow programmers to have full access to innovate and to create with regards to the programming. It's all exposed in DeepSeek. That piece of it is probably solid as it relates to accessing an individual's data. It could be private. You don't need to be worried if you're working on that piece of it. But what most people are going to do, Brian, is they're going to use DeepSeek for search purposes. It's much better than Google, admittedly, at this point in time. So the average person will download DeepSeek on their phone and use it for search, and that's where the data is exposed. The individual's data is exposed at that point in time.
So Mark Beckman, our guest, is CEO of his own company, DMA United, but his book is out just for a week now, and so perfect in the timing, some future day, how AI is going to change everything. I want to just talk about this a little bit, and Anthony Popolino from the investment side, the CEO of Professional Capital Management, weighed in on what's going on here and why the market was so negatively affected. Cut 43.
Well, in the actual user agreement, they definitely are taking data and they are putting it in servers in the Republic of China. And so I tell people all the time that if you really care about privacy, if you really care about the security of your data, then I'd be very careful about the software you put on your phone. If you have concerns about TikTok, I'd have concerns about DeepSeek. And so anytime that you are looking at where is my data going, if you don't know, you should probably go figure that out pretty quickly.
Well, here's the other thing is that you have a situation where if you want to go online to go do this and you want to get answers, for example, if you have sensitive questions for China, 1989 Tiananmen Square, you ask DeepSeek, what is that? They have no idea. It says nothing available. If you ask President Xi, is he a great leader? Nothing available. When you ask anything about Taiwan, nothing available. So they're picking and choosing garbage in, garbage out. So is that what you want controlling in the American mind?
So it's really interesting. I'm happy you brought that up, Brian. For a while, I've been talking about AI wars, China versus America. I also lay out the difference between a centralized and a decentralized artificial intelligence, essentially open and closed. In America, we happen to have a lot of closed, centralized product offerings. Meta is with their Llama version, is one of the only open versions. And I think what that allows for is a lot of opinions, a lot of perspectives. In a way, it's more democratized. You would expect from China the opposite, centralized, closed, and fully in control. In this interest, it's kind of perplexing that they're controlling what people perceive as it relates to China and China's history, mm-hmm. yet it's open. So there's a tension there, I think, that's built into it innately, where they're coming out and saying it's an open platform. They're giving access to all of the technology, but yet they're controlling certain messages.
But aren't you getting the same thing from TikTok? When it comes to anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, nothing positive, almost nothing positive about Israel and their war with the Palestinians. There's nothing positive. You're going to tell me that Trump's not going to be angry when he realizes that the Panama Canal coverage is going to be all about China having no impact on the canal when two Hong Kong companies own portions of the canal?
Totally agree. So it's interesting that you're raising TikTok and the Trump administration, because what we're seeing right now, as you know, is a move to bring TikTok into some sort of American ownership. And there's an artificial intelligence search vertical that you and I have spoke about actually historically called Perplexity. And Perplexity is running right now to purchase TikTok. And the other angle that's interesting is that Trump, I believe, said just yesterday or the day before that he wants the American government to own 50% of that vertical. So Perplexity, TikTok, and America come into play for TikTok. Why is it interesting? Perplexity then has access to all of that data on the search piece of TikTok, similar to what Meta is doing across Instagram, Facebook, and WhatsApp. So it gives Perplexity a big lead or a big advantage over other search platforms.
I just hope the president realizes China can't own it. And if they decide to collapse it instead of selling it, it shows you it's a spying device, because no business person would ever walk away from $2 trillion.
Correct. And it's interesting also, are you aware that the New York City government forbids any city employee from having TikTok
on
their
device?
Did I know that? Yeah, this is true. The New York City chief technology officer joined me in a conversation that I had at NYU, and he disclosed that information. And it's been for a couple of years now. So there must be something going on if the New York City government is so concerned about TikTok that employees are forbidden from having the app on their phone. There's got to be something going on.
I mean, there has to be. And we also know that India has banned it. Romania is about to ban it with an election coming up. So, Mark, how is AI going to change our everyday lives, not just the capital investor and not just an NVIDIA vice president?
So thanks for asking that, Brian. My book really covers a lot of that. What I wanted to do with my new book is create a platform where the beginner, the curious person, the average person who is not in tech could find ways to implement artificial intelligence solutions to enhance the quality of their career, the quality of their family, and the quality of their city. And within each chapter, depending on what people are interested in, it could be fashion, it could be finance, it could be medicine. There's a really cool section in there, which I hope you check out, on government and the evolution of warfare. But within each chapter, I give the reader tools that she or he could use so that they could apply AI to their life immediately.
I find out it's already in schools. I mean, people are already using it. And there's, watermarks they're looking at for teachers to be able to detect it.
Yeah.
So teachers already got to adjust.
It's tough. The truth of the matter is that to see whether or not a student is using artificial intelligence is virtually impossible. The AI has evolved with regards to the way that the text is put out in a statement. So it used to be really easy to figure out, there was a certain syntax to the language that the AI was using. But now it's a little bit more complicated. It's a little bit more sophisticated. This is where the interaction between AI and crypto is going to come into play. Crypto is going to play a major role with regards to authenticating content that might have been produced through artificial intelligence.
All right. So we'll talk about that more when we come back. Mark Beckman's here. Go pick up his book, Some Future Day, How AI is Going to Change Everything. More with Mark. And a lot of this, what happened yesterday was the number one story, and it's not going away today. Don't move.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's a little disconcerting that this is the number one app in the free mm-hmm. app store right now, because you see this is not a reliable place to get any meaningful information. But, John, I do think this is an important moment. Mark Andreessen, who's one of the world's preeminent technologists, said on Twitter or on X today that this is a Sputnik moment. As you mm-hmm. recall, Sputnik in 1957 was when the Soviets launched a satellite into orbit before we did, and it took us by surprise. So what you're seeing in the markets today is a reaction to this Chinese company's claims that, number one, they have reached this level of capability at a fraction of the cost of what OpenAI and others here in the United States have done, and with a fraction of the computing capacity that they did it with. Now, that's important. Mm-hmm. This AI race is going to be the defining technology race of the time, so we've got to get the national will to win this.
And that is Cliff Sims, former DNI deputy director under John Radcliffe, who's now at the CIA. And he's back in the Trump orbit to a degree, even though he wrote, I thought, a hit book on him to a degree. But he was just weighing in on effectively what went down yesterday that caused the market, the tech stocks, to crash the way they did, and to see if it bounces back. Mark Beckman does this stuff for a living. He's got a book out, Some Future Day, How AI is Going to Change Everything on a Practical Level. He's also a CEO of DMA United. So, Mark, just when you hear Cliff Sims talk, you see how prevalent this thing rippled through the entire country.
Yeah, I think it's good that Trump is in office right now. We're on the precipice, as he says, of a golden age. But that applies to innovation, too. So it's time for American ingenuity to step up and innovate. We need to compete. This is a warning for American businesses, for the American tech sector, that China, we had a lead on them. We were about 2 years ahead of them with OpenAI. Now they're right on our tail. They're neck and neck. So we need to accelerate, Brian.
Because what they did is they do reverse forensics on what made OpenAI. And they said, let me improve it. Let's do it cheaper. Labor's cheaper, number one.
Correct.
Number two is they were forced to make their own chips, essentially, because we kind of locked them out.
Correct.
And because of their belligerent behavior. And they've never even owned up to COVID-19. So that's part of it. So they might be a little bit more self-sufficient.
Brian, think about the intellectual property, too. So our LLMs were using, they were scraping different corpus of information from the internet, books, history, et cetera. But we were entering into licensing deals. I think, like, for example, the New York Times, the Washington Post, they were cutting deals with OpenAI, with Google, with Meta, et cetera, so that they had the right to use that content with regards to training the LLM. In this instance, all of that content is now built into DeepSeek, but do you think they paid for any of it? How do you think they accessed it? So it's, again, there's a lot of like old Chinese playbook here, right? Like they're going and they're just taking our IP. I assume they're just taking the IP. They're undercutting the market. And I really think their goal here is to not just beat us with AI, but to also access our devices, to access our data. Data, at the end of the day, data is a major part of this game.
A lot of people listening right now go, okay, take my data. You know, I'm making $65,000 a year. I got a family. I got a mortgage. I got two cars. What do you have on me? What's the negative side of giving up your data?
Well, let's talk about it a little bit differently. Let's say, for example, China wants to come into New York City and start to institute a cyber attack, or Iran, or any of these countries. Now, what's really interesting is we have billions of cyber attacks in New York City every single week, billions, literally. In fact, New York City is working in conjunction with the federal government to safeguard us. We're at a weaker point than China, where it's centralized, because all of our infrastructure is owned and operated by the private sector. So I think in terms of hospitals, banking systems, et cetera. So when we're attacked, when AI is used by China, by Iran, by North Korea, we're attacked in a way that is totally disjointed and disorganized when we have to be on the defense. The government literally needs to align with the private sector to make sure that we're locked down and all of your data and everything is safe and secure. Meanwhile, keep in mind now, China has access to your phone, to the way that you're moving, to what you're purchasing, your consumer habits, anything that's any information that's on your phone, where you live, perhaps they could access your banking information. It's all locked into your phone. And it puts us, I think, in a more vulnerable perspective. When we attack the foreign markets like China or Iran or North Korea, because they're a centralized entity, it's a lot easier for them to protect their infrastructure, to protect their water sources, their hospitals, their banking system.
So when you talk about practical uses of AI, which you talk about in your book, Black George Washington pops up early with Google's AI search. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, so clearly we can't count on this either. And we see China with this leading app that turns out that they have all disinformation on when it goes against the Chinese best interest. Should we all be wary of that?
I think we're still at a point with regards to the development of AI where people should double check. I certainly do. I never rely on using artificial intelligence, if it's generative AI, which is what you're referencing, on its own. I'll use it as a starting point. It could facilitate tasks and open up some free time for more important objectives in my day. But I would encourage all of your listeners, if they're going to use generative AI, to double check, make sure their sources and the information is accurate.
Which is weird, because you just want to be able to, like, do how you soap up an encyclopedia and say, okay, what happened to the War of 1812? You put it into chatbot GPT and go, well, what country came up with this? Is England going to put out something that makes them look better than the U.S.? That kind of, I feel, is a step backwards.
Well, we're getting there. It's almost there. OpenAI, for example, is allowing for sources of information. It's really easy now, so you could click the link and go back and read it and make sure that it's perfect.
All right, so Mark Beckman's got a book out. Go pick it up if you want to see how AI can help you in your life. It's called Some Future Day, How AI is Going to Change Everything. And you can follow Mark at Mark Beckman. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you so much.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
How much does it cost to deport people? Let's say 1,000 people.
Is there a cost if we are forcing countries to take back people who came here without the proper documentation, then committed crimes here?
The things that he has focused on will be things that will increase the prices of people's groceries, gas, and rent, like the mass deportation raids that we are now seeing.
Right. Everyone's so concerned about money. I was watching last night, that was CNN and Tapper show, Stephanie Ruhle's show, another show on CNN, talking about they're worried about the money it costs to ship people out. We're not taking the dishwasher. We're not taking the soccer coach. We're taking the gangster. How much, what price do you put on the safety of Americans? The next Lake and Riley, do you put a price on that? The next child trafficked. We lost track of 80,000 people. A lot of people feel they're being basically enslaved in labor, in manufacturing. And if you talk to Anthony Robbins, who did a whole movie on it, it is pretty amazing what they have found out in our country. Let's say half just with paperwork and just didn't do a good job keeping up with their sponsor family, didn't do a good job keeping up with the and updating the government and how the kid's doing, who you sponsored, you may or may not be related to, but you could have lied about, whatever. Or in the other 40,000, where are they? I mean, these are big deals. But now all of a sudden people are saying military flights are so expensive compared to private flights. Good. Why are you putting them in chains? I don't know. Would you want somebody that's a member of a gang about to be shipped back to a prison in their own archaic country? Would you like to let them just have their normal seatbelt, or do you want to put them in shackles? I'm pretty sure I'd like to put them in shackles, wouldn't you? So their big thing, that's the big thing is now Donald Trump has failed. Thinking to myself, what has he failed at? What has he failed at? They said bringing prices down. Does anyone in America think that you can come in and in 1 week bring prices down? What you do is you want to show what you're going to do. What you're going to do is continue with tax reform to put more money in people's pockets. What you're going to do is lower the prices of oil and gas and utilities to allow those heating bills to decrease and allow the gas to be filled, gas going to your car to be less. And then your diesel as well with trucks. And when the trucks are delivering groceries to the grocery store, that's going to be a little bit less because the product will be a little bit cheaper because, you know why, because if it costs less to deliver, you don't have to charge as much. That's how they're going to do it. But that doesn't, nobody said that was going to happen overnight. If you want to say, well, the president was said he was going to solve the Ukraine crisis overnight, you could say that. But in reality, and if everything he's done, 350 plus EOs and executive orders and motions in those two things, now he's going to get to that. And he's already showing that he's got Kellogg working it, putting together the criteria and plowing the fields, making it ready for both sides to begin talking separately at first and then him in between. Both sides have said they're willing to talk. If you want to look what's happening in Gaza, look, they're still in the first phase of the hostage swap. He hasn't solved it, but he's also bringing up things that are working the ref, saying, why don't we just tell Egypt and Jordan to take a million each so we can fix Gaza and see if they want to come back again and see if we can fix the tunnel, get rid of the tunnels, and get rid of Hamas. Already, he's working the refs there. So things are moving, But to say that he didn't bring prices down and he's failed, which Paul Begala said over the weekend, I actually laughed out loud at a public gym. So this week, Kristi Noem got through. She was on the grounds right here in New York City. They're trying to grab out some of these illegal alien gangsters. She's got the bulletproof vest on. It's really something to see. Never saw Mayorkas this hands-on, ever. Certainly not a president this hands-on. So then you have Kristi Noem through. Scott Bessent is now Treasury Secretary. He is through. So that's good news. You also have a CIA director in John Ratcliffe. That's good. Pete Hegseth, Secretary of Defense. That's good. Marco Rubio's through. Now, this is going to be a big week for, I think, Pam Bondi's going to get through as AG. We definitely need her in place. But the other nominations are going to be electric. And these are going to be hearings that I think are going to be must-see TV. On Wednesday, that's tomorrow, Howard Lutnick's going to be their commerce secretary. Now, Howard's going to be good. I mean, I think he spent most of his time as a Democrat right here in New York City. Loves the president. Thought he could be Treasury Secretary. He's got a great job here. RFK Jr., HHS Secretary, also on Wednesday. A lot of Democrats have it out for him for switching parties. A lot of Republicans don't trust him because he's been ultra-left-wing most of his time. Kelly Loeffler is going to be SBA administrator, the sitting senator, the former senator, is going to float right through. RFK is going to be great because he can go deep in a lot of these discussions on food, on medicine, on vaccines. He's got to avoid the blanket vaccines are bad. He's going to talk about studies that need to be revisited and why. I think that's great. But I think with him, answer the questions. Don't give up too information. Big department. Have a mission. We're going to question things, but we're not going to blow up things. That's what he needs to say. And then on Thursday, Kash Patel, FBI director, they're going to bring up things like he organized the January 6th choir in prisons. They're going to bring up some of the battles he's done there. Okay. But for the most part, he's got a very diverse as a prosecutor and defense attorney background. He was one of the first to unearth the Russia investigation. It's going to win over almost every Republican, I hope. Susan Collins and Murkowski, I hope, give him an honest look. And then Tulsi Gabbard. That's going to be the toughest one yet. I don't think she's had, the word is she has not been strong in interviews. But she told me, do not believe that. A lot of that misinformation is flat out wrong news. And I'll just go with her word on that because I've met her a bunch of times. I might have been one of the first Fox guys to meet her. I was at Obama's White House correspondence dinner. We both had terrible seats way in the back, and I was put next to her. She introduced herself and said, I'm Tulsi Gabbard, and was a great conversationalist, very athletic. She serves in the military still today. They're going to bring up her visit, her positive thing she said about Vladimir Putin, and her visit with Assad. I think she's got good explanations on both. We'll see if it's enough. I'm not for releasing Edward Snowden. A lot of people on the ultra-right think that he did a good thing. I don't. That's not the way you go about it. There's this thing called whistleblowers. We'll see how she feels about that. I don't think it's going to work on her interest to go out and say Edward Snowden should be released and Vladimir Putin's got a point. I don't think she's going to say stuff like that. Sean Duffy's going to get through later today. That's going to be great. So the president's team is taking shape. And as it takes shape, certain people are going to take shots. Shots of those people I just mentioned. Chuck Schumer laid out what he's got a problem with RFK. Cut 10.
Americans deserve to know, will the Trump administration strengthen our health and security or strengthen big drug companies and pseudoscience? Mr. Kennedy's hearing will give us answers. Also, we have to know from Mr. Kennedy, does he want to eliminate life-saving vaccines that have saved the lives and the health of so many, so many millions of children in the United States and around the globe?
What I think he's going to look at is tell people the sanctity of the studies. That's one thing his chief of staff, when he ran for president, who did our show last week, said. He said, you know, they come up and they say vaccines have saved X amount of lives. Where'd you get that study from? When was the last time it was done? They're also going to bring up what happened during the Reagan years. I think it was, or Bush, I think it was 1985 or 89. They came up with this law that they passed that says the pharmaceutical companies can't be sued. And they thought, wow, isn't that sinister? Which was brought up to us yesterday. Not really sinister. It's how is anyone going to make a vaccine with so little profit margin? If you know if something goes wrong with that vaccine, if your body rejects it and maybe you have some health defect, you're going to sue them. It's not worth it. Profit margin is too small and the risk is too great. So in the mid-80s, they decided to lift the liability. And RFK thinks that's terrible. I don't know. If I'm not making much money and I have shareholders, why would I stay in the vaccine business? And then when you say that it's never really hurt anyone and it's only helped people, I'd like to see those stats. And that's when they think that RFK is going to say those stats and those findings are troublesome. He also did Chuck Schumer say that Democrats got their marching orders when it comes to cash and Tulsi. Cut 9.
This week, three of the president's most controversial nominees will testify before Senate committees: Cash Patel, Tulsi Gabbard, and Robert Kennedy Jr. All three nominees have deeply troubling backgrounds and equally troubling views. If Pete Hegseth's nomination process was any indication, these controversial nominees can expect to face immense scrutiny from both sides of the aisle and from the American people.
Yeah, good. And they'll have answers. And Pete did exceedingly well in those meetings. And they wanted to only talk about their personal life. This will be different, I think. I mean, what are you going to talk about Tulsi's personal life about? This is the way it went down, this whole visit with Assad and the positive things she said after. One thing that they said about Assad is that he kept the Christians safe. Catholics like that, Christians in America like that. And they worry about this new regime that takes over that won't do that. And they could tell so far Christmas went through and they were able to practice and nobody's taking shots at him. But that's one thing they brought up. The only reason she ended up in Syria, she was Dennis Kucinich, the former Democratic congressman in Lebanon. And they said, we have an opportunity to go see Assad. Do you want to go? She said, yes. That's what she's going to explain. And just say that, you know, she is basically going to take orders from the president. She has her views as a Democrat. She changed her views as an independent and then went all the way right and became a Republican. That alienates a lot of people and could be inclusive for a lot of people, depending on who you are. When we come back, Stuart Varney and I do a simulcast, and then at the back end of that, I'll squeeze in some calls. You'll listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everyone. Stuart Varney and I will do a simulcast today. We're going to talk about what happened yesterday and how, like, the business world mixed with the real world, which a lot of people are invested in. If they have mutual funds, NVIDIA stock went flying down, maybe that was an opportunity for you to jump in. Why? Because of what's happening with AI. And that's what President Trump has filled up his cabinet with, cutting-edge people. So let's listen in.
One Eastern, Brian Kilmeade will magically appear. There he is. All right, Brian. Senate Minority Leader Schumer just said President Trump's freeze on federal spending has, quote, plunged the country into chaos and calls it a dagger in the heart of American families. Is he just upset that Trump's going after the deep state?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, he said Social Security and Medicare are going to be payments that are going to still be made. But when it comes to the other programs, they're all being reevaluated. Schumer's point is it's already been allocated by Congress. Can an executive, chief executive, in this case, President Trump, stop it? But I think it's making everyone reevaluate and justify the aid programs, where the money's going. I think the president talked about that. And Doge is going to get in and do things like this. But the president wants to get people's attention. He's doing things directly, succinctly, and quickly. So this is going to let everybody defend their aid program. Keep in mind, Marco Rubio over the weekend stopped all international aid, and except for Israel, because that's a country in the middle of a war. Other aid that's been allocated, they're all going to be evaluated and settled down over the next 30, 60 days. So I think it's part of what Trump wants to do is reorganize our spending.
Yeah, and save some money, by the way. That's what it looks like as well.
Yeah.
President Trump says he is, his words, terminating the Green New Scam. Watch this.
I created the new Department of Government Efficiency, and I think it's going to be very meaningful. I terminated the ridiculous and incredibly wasteful Green New Scam, one of the great scams in history. Actually, isn't it 12 years up? They gave us 12 years to live, right? I think that we passed it, right? We're still around. Can you believe it? And we've spent trillions of dollars on just like throwing it out the window. You could throw it out the window. You would have been better off. I withdrew from the one-sided Paris Climate Accord, and I canceled. It was so one-sided.
You know, Brian, it really seems to me that the green movement is just across the board dying on the vine. What say you?
Because they made a huge mistake. Al Gore making it political. So if you're for a gradual switch to renewables, letting the market decide what we drive and what we fly and what we do and how we heat our house, you're a horrible person who doesn't care about the planet or your neighbor. Greta Thunberg hates you. And then if you are like that, you're one of the cool Hollywood people because, I don't know, you drive a Prius and you walk to work. So they made it so political. People aren't even thinking clearly. There are certain things that show progress. There's a lot of people that prefer electric cars. But when you ask for billions of dollars, trillions of dollars, and then you say you're going to build terminals across the country in a new Green Deal, and you build eight in 3.5 years, that's a problem. You have a credibility issue when you're going to give money out of your pocket in the auto industry and tell people to go make electric cars and have a supplement for that. People get angry in the business, less people to make an electric car than a gas-powered car. And people get upset by that. They see a political agenda. And it's the lack of execution by Joe Biden to be able to do the things he says with the money that he took for the majorities that he had. And I think that's one of the problems.
Don't like being pushed around. How about this? Democrat Senator Fetterman, he went on The View and defended his visit with Trump at Mar-a-Lago. Watch this.
If they're playing it straight, then I think I think it's pretty reasonable to have a conversation, you know, inviting me to engage. And I visited it. So maybe some people would be critical of that. But, you know, for me, engaging the president, I think when you're in this business, I mean, that's part of the job. I hope maybe you are watching are tired of just like the venom and the hate. And it's like, I'd like more bipartisan kinds of things. And you are going to agree with things and you're going to disagree on things. And I'm going to pick my fights.
Brian, I don't think The View that they're not fed up with venom and hatred.
They live on it. That's in their format. That's at the top of every rundown they write every day. Yeah. Let's begin with venom and hatred and make sure we end on that same note. So Fetterman goes on there and says, I'm from a purple state. He always spotted, so always talked about how popular Trump was in Pennsylvania, how he saw and went to a couple of his rallies and couldn't believe the emotion and support that he has with him. And then he sees the people there and sees you keep saying that he's with his billionaire friends, but the people in the audience look like Fetterman. Except for they dress a little nicer. And he brings that up, and they think he's the worst person on the planet. He's pro-Israel, and he's pro-cracking down on immigration. So he says, let me work with the president on that. And they think he's enemy number one. Good luck with that.
Classic stuff. Classic stuff. Brian, thanks very much indeed. Run out of time. Sorry about that. I've got to tell everyone, we're waiting the boom.
Yeah, that was crazy. I saw the cameras twisting around, like the head slipping around. We had to switch cameras in the middle. So that was just Howard Stewart Varney on FBN, so that's pretty cool. We talked about a lot of things we were talking about here. And so when Stewart broke up the workforce, so what the president did yesterday, he paused all federal grants and loans and federal assistance. So Medicare and Social Security are exempt. $100 billion of grants to still local and local, state, and tribal governments gets paused. Disaster relief loans and grants are also paused. Now, I don't know how long they can keep them on pause. Some of these grants and loans are needed from the people that he visited over the weekend. But he noted that Joe Biden grew the federal workforce by 7%, 2.4 million people. He wants to take a look at what this guy was spending, how much money is left, why you grew the government, what exactly they're doing. And then some say, well, you got to be frustrated because you can't. If you're a civil service, you're in a union, and it's so hard to get rid of people. People don't usually bother. Well, he has a way of saying, he says, I'm going to recategorize 50,000 workers in civil service in Washington to at-will workers, which means I hire you just like you and I get hired at will, and I'll fire you at will. And that's what he did for 50,000. So this is going to get ugly for some, unless you could justify what you're doing for a living. And maybe a lot of you do, like you work for two people. But for those of you just coasting, want to be at home in your slippers and robe, those days are over. I'm not sure it's worth defending that anymore.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. I come to you from 48th and 6th, where I woke up this morning to find Kristi Noem is in New York City with ICE and ATF gutting a lot of the illegal alien criminals that are in our midst, many of which from Venezuela. We can see the arrest. He's posting a lot of the video online. It's been happening in Chicago. It's been happening in Aurora. It's been happening in Denver, Boston. And now it's happening in New York. It's going to spread throughout the country. They're going to pick up the pace. And they're not only arresting them, they're sending them back to their countries. This hour, we're going to be joined by Kevin Roberts, PhD, president of the Heritage Foundation. And now we have Stephen Koonin here, undersecretary for science in the U.S. Department of Energy under President Obama for 2 years, and a fellow at Stanford University and author of this book, Unsettled, What Climate Science Tells Us, What It Doesn't, and Why It Matters. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I just wanted to say that I'm so sorry. Only people are getting attacked. The children.
We got 250,000 Americans dead from fentanyl across the Dalton border. Where's the tears for them?
Good point, Tom Homan. And that was Selena Gomez sobbing. The border surge is now a slow trickle as a Hollywood starlet sobs about the mass exodus off illegals, and Homan answers.
Number two.
All of it is focused on cruelty, on division, on separating families.
And the impact is, of course, on Americans that don't look like the Trump family, essentially.
Media mayhem. The left wing continues their attacks on Trump. But they are not only battling the right, but they're also battling public opinion now for the first time. Who is pushing back?
Number one.
If we do our job over the next 21 months, not only will House Republicans be reelected and expand our majority in 2026, we will cement a national governing coalition that will preserve American freedom for generations to come.
Got the 100-day blitz, more like the 100-hour blitz from Trump, focusing on aid and defense while he's freezing all other aid except for Social Security and Medicare. And he gets a Treasury secretary while along the way. Queued up three more controversial picks. We'll preview their big hearings this week. Two will be Wednesday and two will be on Thursday. With me right now is Steve Koonin. Steve's got this book, Unsettled, What Climate Science Tells Us and What It Doesn't, Why It Matters. Steve, we hear the President of the United States saying we're going to drill, drill, drill. And you don't see the backlash that we were seeing in the past. When he said, I'm out of the Paris Climate Accord, you don't see the backlash we have in the past. Why?
Well, first of all, the world needs energy. And so anything the U.S. can do to produce more energy is great. I think everybody involved in the business understands that Paris was not working. And it's actually, I think, a positive that he has withdrawn. It'll perhaps give the Europeans an emperor's new clothes moment to withdraw themselves.
So we saw an administration that was all about that, over $2 trillion spent on the Inflation Reduction Act, which President Biden slyly says was never about inflation reduction, was all about a new Green Deal. Has it been effective?
Well, you know, we've certainly seen more green technologies put in, wind, solar, but, you know, it's barely reduced U.S. emissions, and global emissions, which is what really matters, have been going up. They're at a record high this year.
Why is that?
Well, the world needs energy. Most of the world gets its energy from fossil fuels. 80% of the world's energy comes from fossil fuels. And the poorest half of the globe is going to get its energy from fossil fuels because that's the cheapest and most convenient way to get it.
What are we finding that's not working? Is wind working? Is solar working?
Well, wind and solar, all the cheapest ways of making electricity. But the problem is they only work when the wind blows or when the sun shines. And so you need a backup system. The backup system has to be able to run for weeks at a time, which is how long wind or solar will drop out. And so it's just as expensive as the wind and solar itself, and you wind up paying twice for two parallel systems.
So why is it that maybe as a country, is the world waking up to, yeah, it's a nice thought, but in practicality, the world's not going to end if we stay on fossil fuels, and the answer might not be settled science?
Yeah, I think, you know, the world is, in fact, having an oh-my-God moment.
It started out when the scientists said, you better worry about greenhouse gases. There was a lot of enthusiasm at the Paris meeting in 2015. Hey, we're going to solve this problem. And I think in the last year, it's become evident to everybody that this is expensive and disruptive, and we'd better slow down.
Steve, if you work for Barack Obama and you write a book called Unsettled, that means it's not settled science that we are ruining the planet, that the world is heating up. What is it about the science and stats that you saw that made you think that I'm not going to go along with what everyone's saying?
Yeah, you know, you'll excuse me. Most of the media misrepresent what's going on.
I'm not offended because it's not me.
Okay. So, for example, there are no long-term trends in hurricanes, no long-term trends in droughts or floods. Cold waves are going down. Heat waves are going up just a little bit. Overall, most weather phenomena don't show any trends. The world is not falling apart. And the predictions of the models, even the IPCC, say this is going to be a nothing burger.
Here is the media saying what you're saying that they've been saying about every time something happens, like the fires, blame it on climate change.
Yeah, well,
cut 33.
Oh, good.
You would have to be a fool to not understand what climate change is doing to this country and the world.
Wildfires raging in L.A. are highlighting the risk of climate change. Yes, climate change.
The wildfires in California are the latest in a string of natural disasters made worse by climate change.
A big part of why we're seeing more wildfires is climate change.
We're going to talk about these destructive fires compounded by climate.
A lot of people talking about climate change.
Climate change set up the conditions for this supercharged fire.
Exacerbated and increased by climate change.
That's a lot of different voices saying this, almost disparaging. How dare you challenge it? You must have felt that your entire career.
I do. Well, it's only in the last 10 years I've been involved with this. But yes, I've certainly felt that as I've spoken out. But I've been very careful to base what I say with citations to the UN reports.
Well, what do you
or
say
to the
that?
Research.
What
so I'd be ill-informed, ignorant. You know, you can look at the research papers. Fires were burning four times as much in the 18th and 19th century in California as they have even now, between 4 and 10 million acres a year. Now we're seeing maybe a million acres a year. It's all got to do with how we manage the land, how we build our infrastructure. That's why the disaster happened in Los Angeles.
And we know President Biden also gets mad at people even thinking about challenging him. Listen to this. The very last cut, which is 34.
In the weather. Climate change is real, fundamentally altering, not just here, but around the world. Around the world, what's going on? And we've got to adjust to it. We've got to adjust to it. And we can. It's within our power to do it, but we've got to acknowledge it.
And you saying no.
Well, you know, what does he mean by climate change? The climate changes an awful lot on its own, absent human influences. And do we have to adapt to it? Absolutely. But when he says climate change, he means that caused by greenhouse gas emissions, which is, as I said, largely a bump in the road.
When things burn, what kind of gases does that put in the air? What does it do for carbon?
Well, they certainly put CO2 into the air. Basically, it's wood. But more important is all the toxic chemicals that get released and are left in the ground. You know, I lived in Altadena for 25 years, and the house I owned at the time burned. So it's very personal for me.
So you're saying climate change, but what is man responsible for? That's the key.
Well, the man is responsible for the increase of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
And what is the effect of that?
That exerts a warming influence on the planet, kind of at the 1% level. But the real question is, how does the climate respond to that warming influence? Mm-hmm. And how does that change impact society and ecosystems?
What is the state of the ozone layer?
Oh, the ozone layer is largely healed. You know, it was different with the ozone layer. We had firm, direct evidence that it was CFCs that were destroying the ozone. We went up and sampled it. We did laboratory experiments. And there was good reason to stop the CFCs.
And did it work?
It did.
It healed?
It did. It's reduced
significantly. There's this technology out there. And we're talking to Steve Koonin, who wrote the book Unsettled, What Climate Science Tells Us and What It Doesn't and Why It Matters. Steve, there's this new technology that essentially, in layman's terms, vacuums up the carbon out of the atmosphere. And I was reading, like, I saw it in 60 Minutes in the New York Times. How close is that? I see the richest people in the world see a way of maybe pooling their money and getting this thing going. Yeah, Will that work?
So there are two issues. Can you do it at scale? You have to remove several billion tons of carbon a year for it to be effective. That's an awful lot. Even 1 billion tons means you'd have to run all the air through all the air conditioners on Earth. That much in order to remove it. It's currently quite expensive. It costs $500 to remove a ton of CO2 currently. You need to get that down below $100.
But the technology, does it intrigue you?
Oh, it's interesting. But as in most things in energy, it's cost and scale. Can you get those under control?
Is the best thing for the environment nuclear?
Certainly, if you want to make energy, I'm a big fan of small nuclear reactors. I think there's a lot of potential there.
I mean, do you when you say it's unsettled, right? Unsettled science. What would you give to the green community? What do you give it? I'll grant you this. Fill in the blank.
So, is the Earth warming? Yes, it's warmed by about 1 degree centigrade in the last 100 years or so.
Okay.
Second, is carbon dioxide going up in the atmosphere? Sure. Is that largely due to humans? I think almost certainly that that's the case.
Okay.
So it exerts a warming influence on the planet, but how much it's going to warm is quite unsettled, and whether that's going to be a catastrophe or not, I would say we got very good evidence it's not going
to
be.
And what does fossil fuels do to that? Are they part of the carbon producing?
Oh, yes. Most of it is due to fossil
fuels.
Cows,
too?
Yeah, a little bit. Not all that much. Mostly it's coal, oil, and gas.
What do you think about these alternative forms of energy? And, for example, countries like Germany that have adapted it, what has happened?
Well, Germany is a basket case right now. The economy has contracted for the last 2 years. The cost of energy has skyrocketed. Industry is decamping because it's too expensive. When people ask me, what should we do? I say, look at Germany and do the exact opposite.
Right. And now they're begging, you said, energy from the Scandinavia.
Yeah.
They used it and they're rocketing up energy everywhere else.
Yeah. So Germany had a lull in the wind production for a couple of weeks, a month ago. They got their electricity from Scandinavia. It sent the Scandinavian market soaring, and the Scandinavians want to disconnect now.
And lastly, what is the prescription? I mean, do you like natural gas and nuclear as good anecdotes? You say, is there a role for wind and solar?
Wind and solar are at best an ornament because you got to have the backup system. So nuclear, carbon capture, if you want to go zero carbon, it's not obvious. I would say gas with carbon capture is the way to go.
So that's what this administration wants to do. They want to help Europe with natural gas. They want to set up terminals.
Yeah.
They've also talked of them putting pipelines through the Alps to give all of Western Europe some of our natural gas, which we got a ton of here in America.
Energy is the lifeblood of society. Unless you have reliable and affordable and low pollution energy, society just doesn't function.
Is people mad at you? You serve with Obama. You write a book about unsettled. Not many people in the Obama administration think it's unsettled.
So, some of my former government colleagues are, of course, kind of mad at me. But there are so many other scientists and engineers and lay people who've come forward and said, thanks for writing that book.
Here's the other thing, Steve. They made it political. This could be an intellectual conversation. Instead, you're a horrible person if you don't believe it, and you can't be a Republican if you do believe it. So somehow they made it political. Yeah. It never had to be that way. Have you figured out when it became political?
Oh, I think when Al Gore put out his movie, that was when things started.
And the world should have ended already, shouldn't it?
Oh, of course. It's so hard to have those factual, rational conversations. Not impossible and becoming more possible, but still very difficult.
And fundamentally simmering underneath, people are making a lot of money with this green technology and giving speeches about it. So no one wants to give that up.
Right. I like to say it's possible to do well without doing much good.
Just be responsible like you do with everything else.
Yeah, of course.
It's all in Steve's book. Pick it up, Unsettled, What Climate Science Tells Us, What It Doesn't, and Why It Matters. Steve, great meeting you.
Good to chat.
Back in a moment.
We're going to win so much, you may even get tired of winning.
Taking back America, the first 100 days.
You'll say, please, please, it's too much winning.
Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
What's the news freaking out about closer to home?
Friday night massacre.
Late Friday night purge. A chilling purge.
The purge.
Ah! Trump has ushered in the purge! I, for one, will take full advantage by doing some unpermitted lawn work. Your God is powerless. Although, just in case I'm misinterpreting, what is this purge about exactly?
Breaking news, the mass firing of government agency watchdogs.
Trump fired at least 17 inspectors general.
No! He got rid of 17 inspectors general. That only leaves no one knows how many left. The point is, we have 17 less inspectors general. Who knows how many generals will now go uninspected?
That's fantastic. I usually, on Tuesday morning when I get up, I usually watch Tuesday back. I don't know why I didn't today.
It was all fantastic. Yeah. I mean, we have so many cuts of it, and it goes so fast. Like, it, many.
So do you
points.
Think he found a sweet spot between I'll never like Trump and I cannot hate him at on a scale of 1 to 10 out of 10 continuously?
Well, I think he still doesn't like Trump 100%, but I think he does also recognize we have a constitution and three branches of government that balance each other out, and a majority of the country did vote for him, so we are where we are.
All right, so Allison, you also cut the, I haven't heard of this, so here's cut 37.
Democrats, inspire my anger in the least charismatic way possible.
Donald Trump's decision to fire 12 of the federal government's independent watchdogs is a glaring sign that it's a golden age. And Donald Trump's decision to fire 12 of the federal government's independent watchdogs is a glaring sign that it's a golden age for abuse in government and even corruption.
He started again, right? He said it twice? Like, no recognition, just f***ing started again. Is that what happened? Normally, humans in that scenario would go, oh, God, I'm sorry, what, where was I? Let me take that from the top, and maybe this time I'll look up. Can you legally just restart without acknowledgement? Is Schumer AI? Is he deep sea?
So that is great. But by the way, Schumer, just, I don't get it. You ever see him just on the stage? He puts the table up to his chin, and he stares down at the paper as if he's never seen it before. And yet, this is one of those things that if you're the leader, the minority leader of the party, that should be all internal. You should know this stuff inside and out. What bothers you about Tulsi Gabbard? Fill in the blank. What bothers you about RFK? Fill in the blank. Why do you have to read it anyway?
I mean, it sounds like he doesn't go on Sunday shows and doesn't speak to the press. So
he rarely does. I mean, he went a couple of weeks ago. He doesn't go much.
But, I mean, he will do it. So it sounds as if, like, he has to be robotic then when he's reading a statement.
Right. I'm staggered by, there's only a certain amount of people that know how to communicate. Got Lindsey Graham every week. Got Tom Cotton every week. Got Adam Schiff every week. Now you got Fetterman every week. Everybody else, I mean, you would think there's only like 10 people in Washington that are comfortable being themselves.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm also eager to get to work with Congress on the largest package of tax cuts and reforms in American history. We've got to get that done. And we don't want to get hung up on the budget process. We just want, whether it's one bill, two bills, I don't care. Let these guys, they're going to work it out. They're going to work it out one way or the other. But the bottom line, the end result is going to be the same. We want to have all of those benefits. And we want to keep people's taxes low and actually make them lower. And that's not just rich people. That's everybody.
And that is President Trump yesterday speaking for about an hour, I think, in front of Congress at Doral. It's amazing how they always seem to pick his clubs. We're going to look into that. Kevin Roberts, Ph.D., president of the Heritage Foundation and author of Dawn's Early Light, Taking Back Washington to Save America, is with us in studio. So we heard the president address a friendly Republican House members. But, man, there's a lot of pressure on the speaker to get everybody together. And this is the smallest margin, what, over 100 years?
It is. And it's remarkable to consider, Brian, that there is a smaller Republican majority in the House than there is in the Senate by real numbers. And I can tell
you, they're going to get three more by April, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's going to improve in the spring. But as they're figuring out what to do, whether this one big, beautiful bill, as the president says, or two, what really matters is the substance and also moving fast. Because if they don't move fast and deliver quickly, they run the risk of losing this political capital.
What are the headlines? It's going to be immigration. It's going to be defense. And it's going to be energy. Right.
And Trump tax cuts. If you're doing one big bill, then you've got to do the Trump tax cut renewal in that bill. We argue
renewal will change. Are they going to change anything? Yes, they're going to change stuff.
They will change some things. But one of the cautions that we would have at Heritage is that if you want to change too much, then you're actually extending the timeline you need in order to get it done. We think it's important to move fast.
So when you talk about his tax renewal, you also the big changes he has is, well, I want to adjust SALT. And I want to add no taxes on tips, no taxes on Social Security. Okay, well, how are we paying for that? Like, how does that balance out now?
Yeah, it's easier to pay for if you're willing to do entitlement reform, but the president has taken that off the table. And let's just posit for a moment that that's good policy. We think you got to deal with that at some point. Then that means that you're really reducing the number of variables in that equation. That is the places where you can save some money. And that's really the difficulty right now is you've got to get some quick savings from DOGE. You got to get some quick savings from eliminating these DEI programs. But the other key thing here is you're now relying on the Congressional Budget Office to do dynamic scoring to say when you make all these cuts and you renew the tax cuts that you're actually going to have enough economic growth that from that growth generates revenue that allows those cuts to be paid for. There are thoughtful members of the House and Senate who say, look, we're on board with this, but we got to pay for this and not go into any more debt.
Right. And we don't really know what tax – we know tax reform was a benefit to the economy, but then COVID hit before it really had a chance to kick in. So we don't know if that whole – you know, you cut these rates in order to energize business, international business to come back, and then COVID hits 2 years later, and you don't really know the impact. But you know that we are more competitive when the corporate rate was low and people and businesses were coming back.
We know from the 1960s, the 1980s, George W. Bush administration and the first Trump tax cut, that 5-10 years out, that tax cut is essentially going to pay for itself because of the realized economic growth. But the difficulty is in the short term, to your point, in year one, year two, year four, you've got to be able to show that on the budget books, and that's the difficulty right now.
Right. So the House is really – they don't really want to even think about two bills. They just want to think about one. Senator Thune says, I only want to think about two. So you tell me, what would two bills look like? Have you thought about that?
Oh, yeah. In fact, we were recommending that in the fall. We're ultimately agnostic. We just want the something to get done. The advantage of the two bills, Brian, is that you're able to do border security and a couple of the other issues, energy deregulation first and quickly. And look, if the Senate, in fact, is willing to meet more than 4 days a week, you can probably get this done by the end of February. And then
they shown you they're willing to?
There are
they work this weekend.
Yeah, they did on the confirmations. But, yeah. You know, that's the other difficulty with the confirmations taking so long is that they're taking that calendar time from the consideration of that bill. The disadvantage of the two bills is that you lose, if you're Mike Johnson, a very important consideration, which is that you have the sweeteners politically of the border security, of the energy deregulation that you need on the Trump tax cut bill. And so politically, given his really thin math, it probably does make sense for him to focus on one bill. This is a real dilemma, to tell you something that you know. At Heritage, we're just saying focus on the substance, move quickly. If it's one bill, it needs to be signed by Easter.
So one thing is, I remember there were Republicans that did not vote for Trump's tax reform. I think there was a couple of dozen in the House. If a couple of dozen, it's not even going to get out of committee.
That's right.
So, I mean, this is – I mean, you're talking about seeing from the same hymn book, but – can you kind of – is there anybody that you've heard of that you could target on the left to help you out, cushion anything?
There aren't enough. There are a few members in swing districts, so House districts where they're Democrats but that Trump won. There are close to a couple of dozen of those, and there might be a few of those that you can focus on. And I think one of the benefits of the Trump spending so much time with House Republicans, Brian, is not just developing this greater unity – between him and the House Republicans and ultimately Senate Republicans. But then they can move on to trying to peel off some of these Democrats. That only gives you more margin to pass this bill. It probably increases the likelihood that you're going to get good policy.
So here's what Trump said yesterday, cut two.
If we do our job over the next 21 months, not only will House Republicans be reelected and expand our majority in 2026, we will cement a national governing coalition that will preserve American freedom for generations to come. There has never been anything like what's happened in politics in the last few years. Never been anything like it.
So you see that as a historic opportunity, too? I mean, because you know that traditionally midterms usually blow up the party in power.
Yeah, I mean, if history is a guide, they've got about a 10% chance of making that reality. But I do believe that it can be a reality. If you look at the map, you look at how popular Trump is in these aforementioned swing districts. And this actually goes back to this earlier thread we have. This is why it's so important, whether it's one bill or two bills, that you and I are not sitting here, say, on July 4th, talking about what Congress still needs to do. They have to act quickly. In other words, if they act quickly, Brian, and they deliver on what the people expect Trump to deliver on, then you're going to have a story to tell in these midterms.
The other thing is, in the backdrop of all this, you need to increase defense spending. It didn't even come up with inflation. But at the same time, you need to reorganize the Pentagon. So that's a lot to do. How does that fit in, Kevin Roberts, in the budget process?
Well, it's going to be easier to do with the leadership of Pete Hegseth and the team that he's put together, because what they understand is the exact crux of this issue, which is that you can get some savings from programs that are outdated, weapons programs that are outdated, and you can replace those with programs that allow us to win the next war. It fits into this because policy-wise, it's something that we must do. We've got to be able to reestablish a modern lethal fighting force. But politically, it's vital, because there's no way Mike Johnson can get this across the finish line, given the strength of the GOP Foreign Policy Caucus that wants to see that happen.
Yeah, I guess so. The other thing we woke up to today is the president has paused all federal loans and federal assistance, even emergency assistance. Grants to state and local and tribal government just are paused. Disaster relief loans paused. Grants are paused. He's not going to. The thing that goes business as usual is Medicare and Social Security. Why do this?
Because the federal government and its bureaucracy has been so rotten that Trump cannot be convinced, as he sits here today, sits there today, that all of those agencies are aligned with his vision. And so what I think you can anticipate is that the real urgent matters like disaster relief mm-hmm. will quickly come back online. But I applaud the president and his people for saying, once and for all, we're drawing a line in the sand and making sure that all of these programs are aligned with what the people have elected Donald Trump to do.
And what do you think the whole blowing up of the DEI? I cannot believe how much money was pouring into these programs. I thought it was a curriculum and a slideshow. I mean, the money that was poured in to support this in government as well as universities is mind-boggling.
It's god-awful. You know, I had the same thought you did about 5 or 6 years ago, and then I started looking at the number of these DEI officials at places like big public universities in Florida and Michigan and Texas.
Michigan, the biggest, right?
It is the biggest.
And it worked against them.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So there's going to be real cost savings there. But even more importantly than that, we're going to stop dividing Americans, which obviously we shouldn't be doing.
We're going to take a short time out, come back with Kevin Roberts, one of the leading thinkers of conservative thought and president of the Heritage Foundation. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Here's how bad the Democrats f***ed up. Trump is cool now. He's not just the most powerful guy in the world and just made himself like the richest. Mm-hmm. He's actually kind of at 78.
Celebrities all over the place from Hollywood, from L.A. to New York would talk to him. And they all loved him until he ran for office. So then when they talked about him the way that they talked about him, they were like, you didn't feel that way about him before. What changed? And they asked, so a lot of people asked themselves that question, and they weren't satisfied with the answers the Dems gave them.
That is Stephen A. Smith and Bill Maher talking on HBO, I think it's still HBO, about, you know, what's going on in politics. I think Bill Maher's been a breath of fresh air. He's never going to vote for Trump, but he's able to look at it fairly and notice what's happening. Stephen A. Smith voted for Kamala Harris, and he says he feels like he was totally duped. Kevin Roberts, still here, president of the Heritage Foundation. Your thoughts about that impression?
Well, I hear it all the time as I travel the country, and it reminds me of what your morning colleague on TV, Lawrence Jones, did during the campaign, going to all these barbershops. And I realized if African-American men, many of whom probably never voted Republican before, sort of like Bill Maher, are saying, sir, to Trump, we want the American dream back. Trump has become a cultural icon that represents returning this country back to normal. Most Americans, as you know, Brian, from your audience and the travel that you do, they don't care about political labels. They want results and they want common sense. And he's delivering it in spades.
Yes. You notice it, and it might bother you, they don't really talk about conservatives.
They don't.
They don't really talk about Republicans.
Yeah. I'm often told, you know, Kevin, you should stop using the word conservative. I said, guys, I'm going to keep using the word conservative because I think it encompasses a lot. But I get the point, which is that people just want America to be normal.
Common sense.
Yeah,
that's the buzzword. And what I thought was the best emblematic, what I will take away if the Trump presidency ended tomorrow, I will take away that he brought cameras to the deliberation. We watched when he debated gun control in front of the cameras, instead of just having people in, according to sources, this one happened behind closed doors. He meets with Karen Bass and he keeps the people there and he keeps the cameras on. He goes to North Carolina. He gets the microphone. He asks people to walk up and talk. Now, if you're a billionaire with a huge ego that only cares about his rich friends, you don't do that. I mean, I've never believed that. And because I also know the billionaires didn't really like him. So now the billionaires like him, but the American people think that they know him.
What has been lacking so much in American politics since the Vietnam War is transparency. Transparency in our government agencies, for example. But saying that is still sort of inhuman. It's sort of abstract. Trump brings a human face to this, not his, as much as the radical left would like us to think he's so focused on himself. But to your point, he brings the faces of everyday Americans to this. It's his political genius. It's heartfelt. You and I both know him. He's one of the warmest people I've ever met, who's so genuine in his love and affection for this country. And he simply doesn't care what someone's political background is, certainly doesn't care what their ethnic background is. He just wants every American to have an equal shot to succeed.
Yeah, what's interesting is that Fetterman basically said that on The View, and they wanted to jump down his throat. He got found him charming, and Trump liked him. You know, he said, oh, we hit it off with this guy. Plus, you know, Trump's intrigued by a big guy wearing a hoodie and shorts in Florida. So I thought this exchange is cool. I don't know who told Tom Homan to do this, or maybe did it instinctively. From the day he was named Border Czar, he never stopped doing TV. If CNN, CBS, anybody asked him 60 Minutes, he will do TV. So while everyone's waiting to get confirmed, he's doing TV. While he was waiting for Trump to take office, he's doing TV. Selena Gomez, the most popular actress among the 18 to 25-year-olds, with 420 million followers on social media, was sobbing. Listen to Homan's response. Cut 25.
I just wanted to say that I'm so sorry. All my people are getting attacked. The children. They don't understand. I'm so sorry. I wish I could do something, but I can't. I don't know what to do. I'll try everything I've...
We got 250,000 Americans dead from fentanyl across that open border. Where's the tears for them? I've met with hundreds of angels, moms and dads, who are separated from their children because they buried them because they're killed by an illegal alien. We got 500,000 children who are sex trafficked into this country, put separated from their families, put in the hands of criminal cartels to be smuggled into the country. This administration can't find over 300,000. Where's the tears for them?
Do you need to add anything to that?
No, there's nothing to add. Look, I know Tom well. We worked together at Heritage the last 4 years. And what I'll tell you about Tom is he possesses something Selena Gomez wishes she possessed, and that's authenticity. And people love him for the same reason they love Trump, which is that there's no BS. Actually, both men are kind of big teddy bears. They love people. They love this country so much that they're willing to take the slings and arrows from entertainment figures like her, from the radical left media, because they're doing what is right. I actually think that Tom Homan's leadership thus far has been the most important part of an extremely impressive cabinet.
Well, how important is it to be out there on camera? Especially because the previous administration did almost nothing on camera unless they had to for 4 years.
It's actually out entertaining, and I mean that in the best sense of the word, the entertainment industry, which is to say being out there and using these communication channels is vital to keeping the political will sustained for this Trump agenda. This is the issue the radical left's going to grasp on, the issue of deporting all of these illegal aliens. And it's imperative that Tom and others continue to do these great media interviews with every kind of channel to remind Americans why a majority of us voted for Donald Trump.
So what you're seeing now is Kristi Noem on an ice raid today in New York City, and we're seeing the other video of Tom Homan in the garage in Chicago on Sunday with his full regalia on, and you have ATF, you have Homeland Security, and you definitely have ICE. So what we're seeing now is success in pulling illegal immigrants, illegal immigrant criminals out. Jonathan Pullen was on the story last night. He's Rocky Mountains DEA special agent in charge. He talked about what he's seeing. Cut 28.
We've been following TDA here in Denver for a number of months. When I first arrived here in Colorado 7 months ago as the new special agent in charge, saying the words TDA around the city of Denver was like saying a four-letter word in church. No one wanted to talk about it. But then my agents finally and quickly realized that we had a TDA trafficker who moved around 12 kilos of fentanyl across the mountains coming into the city. So that really started us looking at these traffickers and what they were doing and who they were associated with. And then so for the next several months, we've been able to identify more and more of them, link them to other states, link them to numerous other countries, follow them between these sort of makeshift nightclubs. And that's what you see in the images on the screen now. The culmination was a federal search warrant executed at one of those makeshift nightclubs where we found about 50 people inside.
Sunday, Jason Crow of Colorado said there was no problem. The president totally made it up. That's a different story. We knew what that video told us.
Yeah, and this is the advantage of having, in addition to shows like this, all of the kind of independent media where conservatives or, for that matter, just common sense leaders can get their voices out. And you know better than anybody, Brian, people who are a little bit younger than us, maybe a lot younger than us, get their news from those kinds of things. And that's why it's important that the president and his team, including these regional directors for ICE, continue to do every kind of media that comes their way. That's how we sustain political will for this agenda.
And we have our first press conference today. It's going to be interesting to see if there's a little bit more respect given after what they've dealt with for the last 4 years. Kevin Roberts, thanks so much.
You're the best.
Best of luck at Heritage.
Thanks.
All right. Brian Kilmeade Show, keep it here. Don't move.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, The Biden Files.
A person's final story can be told through their bodies in an autopsy.
World-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Biden covers three incredible cases where he helped change the course of the investigation.
Sometimes it takes more than one look to put the pieces together.
Listen and follow at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.